Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the President throwing down the gauntlet on extending middle-class tax cuts and speak with the Washington editor of Altenet, Adele Stan. We'll discuss the coming battle over the so-called fiscal cliff and how long the Republican House will be able to hold up a deal as they fight to preserve tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. Then we'll examine the report on climate change commissioned by the CIA that was released on Friday by the National Research Council. The lead author of that report, John Steinbrenner, joins us to discuss the unparalleled strains that climate disruption will place on the U.S. military and intelligence agencies in the coming years, not to mention the human and environmental cost as our endangered planet convulses with more frequent and unpredictable crises caused by global warming. Then finally, we will speak with Michael Lind, the author of Land of Promise, An Economic History of the United States. We will discuss our economic future that may soon be held hostage by another Tea Party tantrum, or whether a more adult consensus and compromise can be reached in Washington. Michael Lind has an article at Salon.com, The Final Defeat of Backlash Politics. Joining us now is Adele Stan, who is Altenet's Washington Bureau Chief. She has an article on Altenet.org, Obama Throws Down Gauntlet to GOP on Fiscal Cliff, Extend Middle-Class Tax Cuts Now. Welcome to Background Briefing, Adele Stan.
Thanks so much for having me, Ian.
And the president, clearly both sides are sort of positioning themselves and laying down their markers. But the president, I thought, was very effective in his press conference where he held up his pen and said he's ready to sign a bill right away. I'm ready to do it. What's your sense of how long, is the president going to, or are the Republicans in the House boxing themselves into their position of fealty towards the millionaires and billionaires? And will that eventually become manifestly clear to the American public?
Yeah, I think it was a very clever move by Barack Obama. And it was sort of a different Barack Obama than we've seen. He seemed to be saying, if you recall, when George W. Bush won in 2004, he said, well, I have political capital and I intend to spend it. I mean, that's really kind of what I got from the president. Now, the Republicans really have boxed themselves into a corner. And, you know, there's all kinds of recriminations going on within their own party about what happened as a result of the election and whether or not that was a repudiation of that, as you say, billionaire coddling agenda. So what Obama did was he came right out of the box and said, hey, well, you guys are against anybody's taxes going up, and we're against taxes going up on the middle class. So, hey, why don't we just agree right now not to raise taxes on the middle class? You know, that there's already a bill that's been passed in the Senate. Just need the House to pass it, and here's my pen. I'm ready to sign. And it was a very effective television moment that was, I'm afraid, would have been the big news of the day had it not been for the news that came later that afternoon about the CIA director.
Well, scandal always trumps substance. So, and need I remind you, Adele, that you're not living in France?
Yeah, we surely are not.
So it looks like in this case, two of the mistresses were at each other's throats. So we'll find out what's going on there. But there's a lot more, obviously, to learn on the Petraeus story. I was speaking to a former CIA officer this morning who told me, gave me some information that was indicated that what we're hearing now is really pretty ridiculous. We're not really getting the real scoop.
You're not getting the real dirt. Oh, no. You're going to help us find it out, Ian?
I'll do what I can. But today we're talking about far more important things, which is which is the economic future of the country. Obviously, the Republicans are going to use this canard that they've got that we're not really protecting the millionaires and billionaires. We're really protecting small business. And that's what they keep saying, that they want to preserve tax cuts for small business. But the president pretty much addressed that as well. Do you think he shot it down?
Well, I don't know that he has shot it down entirely unless he continues to develop the idea. But what he said in his very brief remarks from the East Room of the White House on Friday was that if Congress would sign that, if Congress would pass the proposal that that was passed in the Senate, what it would do was it would cut out tax cuts. I mean, it would extend the tax cuts on both the middle class and, he said, were 98% of Americans and 97% of small business owners. Because the ruse that the Republicans like to put forward is that that people who make more than $250,000 a year, a lot of these people are small, quote unquote, small business owners. But what they're including in those small businesses are hedge funds. I mean, and these small financial firms that deal in millions and millions of dollars and whose owners make millions and millions of dollars for themselves. So, I mean, that's really what's going on here.
So, in other words, Mitt Romney's a small businessman.
Yeah, he was. I mean, yeah. You know, Bain didn't employ all that many people. Bain Capital didn't employ all that many people. So, yeah, so that's how they like to define it. And it's just, you know, it is ridiculous, but I do think that theme will need further development before it sort of sinks in. And I think it would require probably a real public information campaign by perhaps labor unions or some outside group, you know, doing video and television to kind of get that idea into people's heads.
Again, I'm speaking with Adele Stan, who's AltaNet's Washington Bureau Chief. She has an article at AltaNet.org. Obama throws down gauntlet to GOP on fiscal cliff, extend middle class tax cuts now. She also has an article on voter suppression tactics backfire on GOP galvanizing voters' resolve, which we certainly talk about. But it seems to me that the president has really got to this time, I think, keep campaigning, in effect. What happened in 2010, Karl Rove organized the American Petroleum Institute and others to fund the takeover of various state legislatures by Republicans, particularly in the key swing states. They used this shadowy group, ALEC, as a vehicle to do this. And they were very successful in 2010, and that brought about control of the House. And the problem with midterm elections is that not as many people vote, and particularly not as many Democrats vote.
Right.
So we saw what happens when Democrats vote. The president gets reelected, and they increase their majority in both the House and in the Senate. If they don't do that in 2014, we're going to go back to the future again. It'll be a repeat of what happened in 2010, won't it?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Ian. I really have to keep this get-out-the-vote machine going. And the danger in that is that so much of that get-out-the-vote machine was in the Obama for America campaign, in the president's campaign. And that campaign is now folding, right? Now, which doesn't mean all the apparatus will go away, but, you know, they were supposed to have been, in 2008, been creating a new organization out of that infrastructure called Organizing for America, which never really, you know, gelled. They really need to keep that infrastructure intact and also, you know, I think remind people that there are nefarious forces afoot that want them not to vote.
And as you point out in your article at AltaNet, Adele Stan, voter suppression tactics backfire on GOP, galvanizing voters' resolve. Now, obviously, you're not saying that there's anything acceptable about people lining up for 7 hours, which is what they did in Florida, to vote.
Oh, no, not at all.
But what you are saying is that you know, people really were offended by Republican efforts to deny them the vote, and they stood their ground. But something has to happen, surely, to fix this disgusting system. It's just embarrassing.
It is embarrassing, and it's morally wrong. It's just wrong, wrong, wrong that 48 years after the Voting Rights Act was passed, we're still dealing with these kinds of things. And that it's very clearly targeted at Democratic constituencies, most of, a lot of which are people of color. So the trouble is the structure of the way the U.S. election system works, which is that, you know, Congress deals with our rights as citizens of the United States. That's what our laws are about. And the Supreme Court ultimately is the arbiter of whether that what Congress passes is constitutional. But elections are in the hands of states and localities and how those elections are conducted. So that is makes the whole thing quite unmanageable. Unless there is a new federal legislation that defines those rights and limits the means, that also defines the means by which those rights will be accorded, say, mandating a uniform time of early voting across the states or similar kinds of ideas and measures or issuing a national ID that anybody can get for free because, you know, these ID laws are requiring people to purchase these IDs, basically. When I go to District of Columbia and get just a state ID, it costs me, I think $20. So, which amounts to a poll tax. So, I mean, unless, there are all different kinds of ideas for doing this, but ultimately, we're always going to have a certain measure of election disparity because, of the way the elections are administered by the states. And there's a very strong Tea Party caucus in the House, which is all about states' rights.
Well, also, you've got the Supreme Court that are all about states' rights. And the Voting Rights Act is now, through a South Carolina case, is now before the Supreme Court. And it's very possible, in fact, even likely, that the Supreme Court will do to the Voting Rights Act what they did to the McCain-Feingold campaign finance laws, which is eviscerate them. And that will then, I mean, we just had the experience in Texas where the Voting Rights Act of 1965 struck down efforts to impose voter IDs and other restrictions on minorities. So we can see that it's still working. But the Supreme Court, the conservatives on the Supreme Court are in an alternative universe.
Well, indeed they are. And, as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, the conservatives, they seem to think that everything's all fixed structurally, that after 350 years of slavery and then another, 100 or so years of outright,
Jim Crow
and discrimination, that now 48 years later, everything's fine. And what is up before the Supreme Court, my colleague at Alternet, Steve Rosenfeld, is our elections expert, and he's written about this case, is that the Voting Rights Act, what it did was it required states that had a history of preventing people of color from voting that they now had to submit to the federal government their plans for making the polls accessible to people, and they had to do this regularly every time the act is renewed. These states are challenging the saying that the situation has been rectified, everything's fine, and it's time to get the federal government out of their elections. Well, hey, not so fast.
So
those lands in Florida. That's right.
Well, that's what's so disturbing is that the evidence is so manifest. But when Justice Scalia was recently interviewed by NPR, he about Citizens United at the height of all the super PAC money pouring in, with all of its the 501c4 dark money shielding the donors. I think it was Nina Totenberg, he said, well, there is disclosure in Citizens United. Well, she, unfortunately, she didn't ask the follow-up. What are you talking about, you know?
Right.
So that's what's scary about these guys, is that they either believe it or they don't. Maybe they're incredibly cynical. They're just political hacks. I don't know. It's terrible to think that you could even consider them political hacks, but they sure seem to be behaving that way.
Well, I mean, going back to the 2000 election, they kind of revealed themselves to be that, you know, partisan and political people. So, I mean, I think that with this election, one of the reasons it was so very critical, the outcome, was because of the court. But it doesn't mean that in the interim that the court that exists in its present form couldn't do a great deal of harm to voting rights. But if we have any indication by, you know, and we have to say about the turnout in this election, the Obama machine, of course, was astonishingly good at turning out their voters. But also you had a lot of groups involved in election protection who were educating people about, you know, how they could challenge authorities when their right to vote was being prevented, and that kind of thing. So I think that we're going to see a lot of pushback if, as you say, the campaign stays alive and people stay organized.
Well, Adele, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks so much for having me, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Adele Stan, who is Alternet's Washington Bureau Chief. She has an article at alternet.org, Obama Throws Down Gauntlet to GOP on Fiscal Cliff, Extend Middle Class Tax Cuts Now. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the lead author of a new report on climate change commissioned by the CIA.